Save It for the Blind is sponsored by Kershaw Knives. Kershaw manufactures next-level pocket knives for outdoor enthusiasts. Save for the Blind is now also being sponsored by Roseville Motorsports. Roseville Motorsports is the greater Sacramento area's premier destination for all your power sports vehicle needs. Stop in today to browse off-road vehicles from leading manufacturers like Polaris, Yamaha, and more. If you guys are enjoying the show, we'd love to hear from you and get your support. Please follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Give us a 5-star rating. Your reviews really help us grow and reach more people. Thank you for being a part of our community. Welcome back to another episode of Save It for the Blind with Carson and Jeff here at the CWA office. This time we are going to be doing a little end of season recap along with questions from a hat. So myself created some questions, mostly for Jeff, but some that I'll be able to chime in as well. And then Jeff created...
And we have some questions from listeners.
From listeners as well. I have no clue what Jeff has typed out and stuck in my hat. And same the other way. He has no clue what I have written on the cards and are in his hat. So these will be a surprise to both of us, and we're going to answer them the best that we can. I think some of them are a little bit hypothetical. Some of them are about this season, maybe even our jobs, and kind of go from there. Once we get through enough of these questions, we're going to bounce over to talking about the actual end of the season. Now that it is over, we did a podcast a few weeks ago that encompassed a lot of how the season was about to finish before the last 2 weeks actually happened. But we do have some final numbers now that the last day of late goose season today has been completed. We'll get a phone call from our volunteer veteran coordinator, Mike Kellogg, and see how his late goose season and his veteran season was. So do you want to start? You want to pull the first one?
Pull the first one.
Yeah. Ooh. Go for it.
Here we go.
Again, never seen these before.
Question from
And they're all over the place. So that one's...
This one's to anyone. So how do you prepare for a hunt mentally, physically, in the days leading up to it?
Okay. Big game's so much different than waterfowl. And this is a waterfowl podcast, so we'll go with that. Mentally, not much different. The thought of having to wake up really early. I think physically the best thing that I do is I try not to drink alcohol the night before, and I try to get to sleep early to get as much sleep as I can, because I hate getting 2 hours of sleep and not feeling great to go drive and sit out in the cold and shoot a shotgun. It doesn't pair well with me. So
yeah,
my mental preparation, my preparation beforehand is, I like the preparation of like getting my stuff out and sticking it in the garage and like going through my P's and Q's of like, all right, I got my shells, my shot cam is charged on my gun, my gun's in the gun sleeve. And I like to lay all my stuff out the night before right in my garage, where in the morning I can wake up, open my garage, grab my stuff, throw out my truck and just go.
Yeah, I do the same thing. So I line everything out, so it's just a grab and go. And then if I needed to grab batteries off the charger or whatever, I'll leave myself a note so I don't forget that stuff. But yeah, that's how I prepare. Bed early, line everything out. So in the morning, get the coffee goes in the thermos, and then I go to the shop, get my stuff, and I roll out.
Yeah, I feel like
if
I have all my stuff laid out the night before, very rarely do I forget something important. I don't know when the last time was where I was like 30 minutes down the road and it's like, oh, I forgot batteries for the blades, or I forgot XYZ. It seems like the only thing that I would say I forgot this year was at our rice blind, we have our side-by-sides in containers, and I had switched trucks one day and I forgot to take my key to the container out, and I showed up. And luckily, we can walk to one of our blinds, so I was able to walk there, but I didn't have the key to the container for the side-by-side that morning. That was the only thing I forgot all year.
You don't keep the keys in the side-by-side?
No, the key to unlock the container. Oh, so I couldn't even get in.
At least you had a lock on the doors and locked it.
That's very true. All right. Let's see what question you have in here for me. What's the most memorable wildlife encounter you've had while hunting, not the game you were pursuing? I know the exact... One comes to mind right away. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Most memorable wildlife encounter. I'll give two. So CWA has a pig hunt at a place called Schaefer Ranch in Dublin. And we were running pig hunts there pretty consistently. I think this was about a year and a half ago. Well, maybe 2 years ago. And it was a big drought. And I took the hunter up a creek drainage. And we got into the creek drainage. And there was, used to be a wallow. There was still some water left around. So we sat about 20 yards back from the wallow. The wind was good. It was midday, hoping something would come in the heat. And all of a sudden, what sounded like a couple hundred yards away, it sounded like piglets were squealing. And so I look at the guy that was hunting with me and I said, did you hear that? And he goes, yeah. I go, it sounded like piglets. And he goes, no, it sounded like a bird. And I was like, I've hunted a lot of these pigs. Like, I'm pretty sure I know what the piglets sound like, but it went silent. And then like 5 minutes later, I hear the sound again. So I stand up and I'm looking. I'm like, I know that sound. That is 100% piglets. I'm thinking, okay, they're going to come running in. They're just chasing each other, whatever's going on. So then it stops. Like, what the heck is going on? I was like, they're not coming in. They squeal, they stop, they squeal, they stop. And so again, about 5 minutes later, the squealing starts. I'm like, all right, what's happening? And he goes, no, it's coming from that bird up there. And I look up and the squealing gets louder and louder and louder. And there's a, I don't know if it was a bald eagle or a golden eagle, and it had a piglet in its talons.
Oh, no way.
And it flew over us. And that's what the sound was the whole time. I was like, I will never see that again, ever.
That's
wild. Yeah, the chance that I was in that time and place when that, and I saw that eagle there for probably a month. I think he was just picking off piglets. Easy grabbings.
That's crazy.
So that one, and then the only time I ever saw a mountain lion, I was deer hunting, ran across the road in the headlights of my truck. And it ran across the road to the side of the road that I was going to hunt about a half mile from the parking lot where I park and start hiking in. And I thought, I'm going to wait till it gets light, till I can see to start walking. You know, just that kind of weird sense that you just saw a mountain lion run across in the front of your truck. So I make it like 100 yards down the trail and I look up on the right side and there's that mountain lion slinking kind of away from me. I don't know if he knew I'm pretty sure he probably knew I was there, but wasn't coming towards me, wasn't anything aggressive. But I just sat and watched him walk on the hillside across from me. And that was pretty cool because I felt like he didn't know I was there. I felt like I was watching something that should be watching me. So that was a really cool experience. But those two stick out in my mind.
That piglet's wild.
Yeah, I just...
You'll never see that.
When are you ever going to... It's never going to happen again.
Ever.
Ever.
That's awesome.
What about you?
I would say mine was... I was hunting a river with my dad. We're in the boat. And there's this beautiful drake... widgeon. So the dog went out, got a bird close to the boat, and there's this beautiful drake widgeon floating on the water, like just perfectly plumed. I still see it in my mind, like just picturesque, snow on the ground, awesome drake widgeon on the water, and this bald eagle comes out of nowhere and just swoops down and grabs it with his talons, and we're like, hey, and then he like goes to swoop up and he drops it.
Yeah.
And then he comes back again, and I was like, hey! And like my dad, I think, thought like I was going for my gun. He's like, no, don't shoot. I was like, I'm not going to shoot that. Like, what are you talking about? So I was like, no. And it scared it. And then there's this big old like pine tree by like a hay barn. And the thing just went and just boop and just like watched us. But it was the coolest thing because like we're watching the bird. Dogs bring one back. And then just at this moment, this bald eagle comes out of freaking nowhere and just... attached to the bird. Then there was like feathers all over. So then, then there was like the bird on the water with all the feathers from the bald eagle that, you know, after it dropped it. That was pretty darn cool. But I've seen lots of like minks and bobcats and
like weird creatures.
Yeah. And those are kind of more, I would say, normal. Like if you're around enough, you're a lot. But that one for sure is pretty cool.
The actual encounter of what took place was a thing that was cool. You know, you see plenty of bald eagles, but actually seeing it do its thing.
Yeah, it was just, it was cool, you know, and thinking back in my mind, I was like, probably could have let it have the bird, you know, but I was like, hey, exactly. You know, it's our bird. But yeah, I just went up in a tree and then watched us for a while, and that was it. I could see it in my mind like a picture. It was one of those just cool moments in time. Yeah.
All right. Grab one out. They're kind of folded up.
Oh, handwritten. Wow. Yeah.
It's like a love letter. If you had just one more hunt to go on, where would it be and who do you want to share with? I got a question similar to this, but it's not exactly this. I would want to go to Alaska. I've never been there. I would want to go on a moose hunt because I think there's the most amazing creatures, and I would want to take my dad because it's on his bucket list as well. And I think that would just be exceptional. I've been able to go on a lot of cool hunts in my life already. Yeah. And I've seen Shiras moose in Utah and Wyoming. Never seen Alaskan Yukon moose, but the pictures and just the scenery and everybody, how they talk about that hunt, like bucket list number one, want to make it happen someday.
Do you even apply for moose tags?
No, because
Idaho, right? You can do no points.
Shiras moose.
Yeah.
I do apply for Shiras moose points in multiple states, Colorado, Utah. Idaho has the best chance of actually drawing because you have to front the tag fee, which is like $2,500 or something like that. And I would like to do that, but I think those Alaskan Yukon moose are such different creatures
it's like true moose hunt. Like when you think of a moose hunt, you're flying in somewhere, drop pack. You know,
it's like trying to compare hunting, I don't know, mule deer to elk. Like for me, at least, elk are just such so much more magical creature than a mule deer. Mule deer are great, but like right now, my draw is towards elk. Like if I hunted a Shiras moose, I'm sure my draw would still be towards that Alaskan moose. It's just that kind of thing on the pedestal.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. Question from the hat. Can't bring one. Waiters, calls, or decoys? Which one would you leave out? I'd probably go decoys.
Good. You could bring your waiters and your calls.
Yeah,
go
waiters and calls. I mean, yeah.
What if you're hunting in the rice? Would you forego the waiters and just walk out to get your birds? Well, you didn't have a dog.
Probably not.
Still good. Just no.
Yeah. No. Well, because I mean, like, if you're like, if a spec sometimes wants to just listen and then they'll try to find
it. Yeah.
But you know, like group of teal or something like that, you kind of give them your vicinity, I think. But yeah,
I tossed around waders and decoys multiple times. I was like, I could get wet and just sit there. I'm like, well, I've been cold and wet before.
I don't like to be wet.
I need my calls. Calls are not on the table, but. I think I could get by without my waders. Would I want to? No. I'd have more confidence in what I was doing. Maybe I just think I could get out with my seven sooner, get back home.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, it'd be
more.
It's
a tough one.
It is a tough one. I have something real similar to that.
Oh, I found the exact question, the very next one. So basically same question. If you left one behind, except it's duck calls, waders, or shells. So the reason I didn't put shells in mine or gun, because how am I going to shoot anything without those?
Well, if you had a friend there, if you're with a friend, borrow a gun.
That's true. I didn't factor in that. Well, so in that sense, if I had a friend.
So let's say
if I'm inviting them hunting, they're going to be a good enough friend to give me their shells.
You're going to the refuge.
And you have to ask somebody else for shells? Because you didn't have any?
Yeah. Which one would you rather leave home?
If I was going to the refuge, I'd rather leave my shells and just walk up to somebody and be like, hey, I'm in a bad place. Like, can you help me out?
Be that guy.
Hey, we got Venmo nowadays.
Well, if you want a straw purchase and buy an ammo, hey, it has to be a gift.
I'll gift them $20 and they can gift me a box of ammo.
Give me some ammo. Do you got any heavy shot?
Yeah.
Or Federals?
I was shooting
Blue Box.
Heavy metal, heavy metal extreme yesterday. I don't know where I got it. I had four boxes in my garage. It was a late goose hunt yesterday. They were stacked, steel and tungsten. Guess what size the tungsten was?
The tungsten?
Yes.
I would hope like some smaller, fives, fours?
Twos.
Oh.
Tungsten twos and steel BBs.
Ooh, that's a...
Listed at $62 a box.
Jeez, that's a goose load and a half.
It worked. Did it? It worked real well.
Huh.
Yeah. I don't know where I got them, but I was like, this is the time I'm going to shoot them.
Extremes.
Very.
All right. It says, you're leaving for New Zealand in 2 months. What are you most looking forward to on that trip? Well, I'm definitely not looking forward to being away for that long. That's going to be hard on the family, and got a birthday anniversary that I'm missing. But I'm most looking forward to just open mind of like the culture, how they hunt, when they hunt, etc. I really want to shoot paradise shell ducks, and would love to shoot a, you know, red deer and a stag. With the wallabies as their varmint there as well. Wouldn't mind doing a black swan if it presented That'd itself. Be cool. But Canada goose hunting at nighttime with the flashlight is something I want to. I'm a little nervous about that one because, like,
goes against everything you've ever been taught.
Yeah, because there are varmint there, so you can shoot them with all year, everything's open. But it's like, you know, you're shooting at a big bird in the dark, you know, they got to fall somewhere. Yeah. So a little worried about that, but no, I'm excited. My brother's coming with me. So, I'm really, really looking forward to having that opportunity with him and, you know, create those memories and stuff. So really looking forward to being there, but, just an open mind,
good
open mind of everything. So I heard there's lots of meat pies and stuff there. So I gotta,
well, we'll either have a podcast when you're in New Zealand. We've talked about trying to figure that out, or we'll just have a recap for when you get back, so everybody can hear exactly how the trip was.
Yeah, for sure. We'll see about the phone call. I got a bill the other day for $54 for an international call, and I was like, "What is this?" Because I haven't been charged previously, and then it just showed up on the bill.
You switch carriers?
maybe. That's probably what you maybe. Did. I don't know. I don't remember what that. You did. I got Verizon now.
All right. Let's see. What's been the best hunt you've ever experienced? What made it unforgettable? Best hunt I've ever experienced and what made it unforgettable?
Waterfowl.
God, there's so many good ones that stick out in my head. For some reason, my mind's going back to Klamath, back when you could actually hunt up there. There was one, and I'll just touch briefly on it because I don't know the exact details of how many birds were shot. And I think that's part of the experience. Like, I don't know how many birds were shot. I don't even know how many people were there. All I remember was we were sitting in a unit in Lower Klamath, and we were looking north towards the Oregon side, and you could see a wall of snow coming, and it was just
like the storms coming into the
valley. Like when you see, when you're in the valley and you see that like curtain of rain, it was that, but it was snow. And it was like, okay, it's getting closer. And it hit, and it was like, it brought every duck with it. It was the snow as soon as that snow hit us, every duck was in that snow and they were coming out of the snow, and it was just magical. Like I said, I don't remember how we ended up. I don't remember who I was with. I'm sure I was with my dad and somebody else, but remember that one. And then when I was in high school, as soon as I got my driver's license, my dad would let me go up to Lower Klamath and Tule Lake by myself for the week of Thanksgiving break that I would get. And I had a hunt on the Tule Lake side in 1B where I walked in the back and it was all iced over, and I broke up a little hole in the ice and by myself, 17-year-old kid, shooting ducks feet down in this hole in the ice. And I thought it was just the coolest thing ever.
And I'm the best.
Yeah, it was great. And I just, you know, that experience being that young and being like, okay, I can do this. Yeah. And it was intimidating because that morning I was coming across State Line Road up there and hit black ice in my old 91 Jeep YJ and made it all the way across to one side of the road and all the way across to the other, and shook me up pretty bad in the dark. I was like, all right. And going through ice and breaking through ice. It was definitely a growing up moment for me. And it was just yeah. cool. And I go back to that hunt a lot. And one of the highlights of that hunt was I shot a Drake canvasback, beautiful Drake canvasback. And it had been shot previously through the bill and it had healed up in a perfect circle. And I very much regret not mounting really? It because it was a perfect BB hole right through the bill. No fragments of anything. It had completely healed over and it was just a beautiful bird. And I should have mounted it and I didn't. That's probably the bird that I regret the most not mounting.
Dang. Sounds awesome.
Yeah, it was fun. What about you?
Oh, gosh. I've been very fortunate to have been on some phenomenal hunts. I would just probably say some of the hunts with just me, my dad, and my brother. Kind of same circumstances. You know, it's snowed or had snowed. My brother's friend had a piece of property once, and there was like it was like some headwaters of a river, and the water was like turquoise blue coming out of the lava rocks. And we had a couple hunts there, and like one of the first times we ever hunted there, we shot limits of greenheads, shot our limits of honkers, and I think there was one or two bands, but it was like at the time I was like, this is the best spot I've ever seen in my life. But it was cool because, I mean, I just remember vividly working ducks really high, like 500-600 yards, like big groups of mallards, and them just coming out of the sky, like literally straight down.
Yeah.
Had a bunch of goose hunts, like geese landing on your blind and stuff like that. But I think a lot of the times just who you're with and then what happened in that hunt to kind of make it special. But
yeah.
Gosh, way too many.
it's hard to pick just one. You think about it. There's even when I'm just driving around, you know, there's hunts that like jump into my mind, and those are definitely two of them that I go back to.
Yeah. Yeah. To me, like the conditions help. I mean, like you could have the best hunt of your life and the rice and it might be awesome, but it's like,
yeah, Yumi had a great hunt this year and it doesn't fall anywhere near that. It's just like we went out and killed 14 ducks. It was like, yeah, we both shot great and it was cool, but it wasn't that just like special.
Right. Yeah. To me, like special, like, you know, walking on Little Dry Creek with zero expectations and having a hunt of a lifetime, to me, those are the tops.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Where the expectation is super low and it just happens to be your day and you're in the right place at the right time and it works out. To me, those take the cake for sure.
Yeah. All right. Pick one. I think some of them might overlap a little bit. So if any of them do, we can get another one out of there.
What CWA property surprised you the most this season? I'll probably go with Badger Almonds. We were able to get some water out there a little bit earlier than we expected. Shot really, really well early on and then even later in the season. So probably Badger. Grizzly Ranch had a record-breaking year.
Yeah.
So slowly, I mean, it just nice and steady all year.
Yeah.
So
my answer would have been Badger Almond down at Goose Lake or Quimby Island. Like, we knew it could be good and we added another group this year. I just didn't realize it would be that good with adding another group. It was, I mean, some people had some absolutely, again, memorable hunts that they'll probably never forget.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, absolutely. Staten, another one. But I mean, that to me, like Quimby or Staten or whatever, it always has opportunity to be something really special. But with Badger, you're always kind of waiting for the birds to get there. But they were there literally
from
like
start to finish pretty much.
Year, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's see what we got. Great. Have you ever received a game violation ticket? What happened? No, I haven't. Can we hire people with game violation tickets? Is that even a thing? I'm pretty sure you get fired from DU if you have a game violation ticket.
I don't know if that's in our policy or not, but I know you can't go into like Canada and things like that if you have a game violation. Have you ever been close to being ticketed?
No. I've been checked many a times. The day actually that we were talking about when I was in Tule Lake by myself. I got checked by federal warden on the way out to make sure I had my pass for up there, and I had all my stuff by myself, freezing in the snow, and the guy's waiting at the parking lot. And I was like, well, I've been checked plenty of times, but no, never gotten a ticket. The only thing I could think about was back when I hunted refuges, they used to do those checks when you walked out.
Yeah.
And I probably had a shell or two at the bottom of my bag, but never got cited for anything.
Yeah.
I've never been forgotten anything like that. So no.
Yeah. The only time that I remember, we were hunting and I had an old 78 Ford Ranger truck with no tailgate on it in high school. And after the hunt, we threw everything in my brother's truck. And I was in front of my brother on the way out of a hunting area. And I saw the game warden. He went right past me and waved. And I look in my rear view mirror and he's got my brother pulled over. So I just turned around and
go help out your brother.
Well, no, I was like, turned around because my birds were in his truck. Everything, dude, my gun, my everything was in his truck. So he saw us and the game warden, or my brother was like, hey, just to let you know, my brother's stuff who you just passed, all of his stuff is in my truck too. So I rolled up and I was like, hey, you know, my birds X, Y, and Z are in your truck. He's like, where's your gun? I was like, they're in his truck. And when we lived like four blocks away from like where we were at, where he pulled my brother over, so he's like, all right, you guys get out of here. And then we just were on our way. But technically he was in possession of, I was in high school, you know,
But
luckily.
I've had it, not that it was ever close to getting taken, but a couple of those where when I hunt, we tend to put, when we probably shouldn't, we should probably separate birds better. We know what who shot what, but we put all the birds on one stringer and then you walk in. I've had a couple of times where the game wardens, who shot what? I was like, okay, I shot this and I shot this and I shot this. Like, hey, well, you guys need to separate them. And we definitely should do a better job at that. But no, never been cited.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
All right, your turn.
Favorite save it for the blind guest. Ooh, that's a tough one. Talking with Colton's always fun. I enjoyed talking to Hunter Strickland.
Oh yeah,
that was a good one. But I thought Will Primos was pretty just down to earth, knowledgeable guy.
Yeah.
I enjoyed talking to him. He just seemed like a super nice person.
Yeah.
How about you?
Terry Denman.
Oh, that's a good one.
That was a cool one.
He was good.
Every time I talk to Rue Mapp, she blows me away. I just love listening to her speak. It's so eloquent and just filled with information. So probably those two.
Yeah, she is phenomenal.
Those really two good. Stand out to me. I don't even remember what I wrote on half of these, so these are a surprise to me.
What is the thing that you are already looking forward to next season?
Oh, that's a good question.
Getting back out in the field with my son and dog. I think the dog is already missing it pretty.
Is the dog back to being healthy enough to go?
He is, yes.
That's good.
No more vet bills. But yeah, the dog is like where the ducks at like just picking up everything in our house from shoes to stuffies to whatever. Just needs something in his mouth. So started doing bumpers and stuff like that. But no, kind of seeing the dog progress. Trying to just, I think, soak it up. Like, I think we get so busy with work and you're like, oh, I got to get a quick hunt in or whatever. You don't really soak up the moment in the field. So I'm going to try to do a better job of taking it all in and appreciating the opportunity that's in front of you.
You said your son, is he expressing more interest? When's he going to get his license?
Yeah, I think we're going to wait. So he'll be 9 next February. So we'll get it that summer. So he'll be 9 going on 10 that first duck season.
Gotcha. So he'll miss the 25-26. He'll go out with you and experience it and bring the BB gun along. But his first actual license year will most likely be 26-27.
Most likely if he progresses and still has the interest that he has. But he likes going out and you know, all that stuff. We pick and choose the right days, but
yeah,
sure, next year will be a little bit more. So,
yep. All right. Every waterfowl season has its own vibe. What stood out about the 24-25 season? What did you learn from it? The rain. The rain stood out. The early rain. I think the weather stood out in a positive way for me personally, because the year before, the 23-24 season, was so many gray sky days of just nothingness. And we had weather this year, and we got flooded out. It wasn't for that long. And then we'd get sunshine and we get breeze and sunshine. And then we get some weather, but it was actually a storm. We had very few of those gray dome days that we all hate until mid January. We had that slow period.
Yeah. It felt like duck season.
It felt like duck season all year this year. Like, we were shooting ducks all year, other than the first part of October when the season opened, our rice blind didn't have water. But other than that, I mean, you could go out pretty much any day from November until the end of January, other than those kind of little weird spot in January where it got stale, and go shoot ducks.
Yeah. I think a lot of the refuge data shows that our properties show that, overall it was above average duck season, depending on where you were, if you weren't flooded out or not.
But yeah. You know what I learned from it? Weather. It's a big factor.
Hunt and hunt often.
Yeah. Hunt as much as you can and keep going.
Yep.
All right. We're getting sort of towards the end of some of these.
A lot in there.
Hey, just wanted to thank you for listening to the podcast. Please make sure to go give it a review, share it with your friends. You can also go to calwaterfowl.org to check out our most recent events. Some events that we have coming up are the Oakdale Banquet on February 20th, Hollister Banquet on February 22nd, and the Contra Costa Crab Feed on March 7th. So go ahead, get your tickets for those events at calwaterfowl.org.
What is your dream hunt, waterfowl or big game? I got to do Arkansas flooded green timber. That one is on the bucket list. Got to do it.
That's the top.
I think so. Just to see the ducks coming through the trees. I don't even need a lot of ducks. I just need a duck or two to come through the trees. But I want like traditional flooded oaks.
Big timber.
I don't want cypress trees or any of that fake stuff. I want real flooded oak
trees.
That's
doable.
Yeah.
That's a doable one. What's one piece of advice you'd give to someone just starting out in waterfowl hunting? I can't remember if I wrote this down or I was thinking about this question earlier. Don't be afraid. Well, two things. Don't be afraid to fail, because you're going to fail. And make sure you know the rules and regs before you go out there. As a new hunter, you're going to fail over and over and over again, and you have to understand it's just part of the learning process. Everybody does it. You're never going to go out and just shoot limits every time. And make sure you know what the regs are, because unfortunately there are legal implications to what we do. So as long as you're doing it right, you don't have to worry about that. But it would put a very bad taste in somebody's mouth, especially a new hunter, if they received a ticket from doing something they weren't aware that they were doing, and turned them off to hunting. So those two would be my biggest thing.
All right, so this one says, would you rather have a 50-day season starting in December with 7 pintail or keep the 25-26 regs?
Oh, that's a good one, huh?
I got to go keep it the same.
You wouldn't take... Think about that. That's 2 months of just 7 pintail? Do you know how many pintail?
You only hunt so much. Thing is, I'd like, you could
every
all...
day.
What, how? How would you hunt every day?
I got a lot of time off. Come on.
You're not. It has to be approved by somebody. No, I would probably keep it the 100 days. That one's really, really hard, because...
Is there any season framework that you think you would rather have than a 100-day season?
No.
You'd rather have the full days and then deal with what kind of birds we have depending on the populations?
Yeah, because in my mind... I only have so many days a week I can hunt, whatever those days may be in the calendar year.
Yeah, yeah.
It might be a Monday this week and a Monday, Tuesday the following week, or none the third week. Where when you have a short season like that, 50 days.
You have to jam it in if you get sick or something.
That's what I'm saying. You're sick. Something happens to your family. Your dog goes to the vet. Whatever it may be. To me, you're just lessening your odds of going.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I'm not going to take off 50 days.
But you could shoot 7 pintail.
Yeah. But I don't know. I like shooting widgeon and teal. And,
yeah.
The other duckies too.
I think that's a question in there, actually. All right. Looking back, what brand engaged shotgun did you use to bag your first duck? We were actually just talking about this. I think, if I'm right, I could be wrong, it was either a Benelli Nova pump or a Remington 870. And I don't think it was a Remington 870 because the Remington 870 I have was a 12 gauge. Well, maybe it was because I shot it and I was standing in a boat in Tule Lake and I about fell out of the boat when I was 10. So maybe it was a 12 gauge. It was either a Remington 870 in a 12 gauge or a Benelli Nova pump. And I shot a Hen Gadwall that is now in my garage on the wall.
Oh, Hen Gadwall.
All
huh?
brown and brown.
The old first duck mount.
Yep. Got to do it. What was yours?
870 pump, youth edition. Which I find hilarious about those old youth guns is the barrel was like a sawed off, but the stock was normal. Like, so it still was huge on me, but yeah. It had a short, tiny barrel.
Just gives it more kick.
Oh, the thing kicked like a mule too. My brother has it. I told him I didn't want it. Just remember trying to get my gloves off to put the safety off. Bad. And first duck was a Hen Teal. Yeah. What event are you most proud of at CWA that you helped create? Probably two part. The duck camps for sure. Mm-hmm. And then the veteran hunt program. So
yeah, they're good.
The program and the event. The duck camps are awesome. Fun stuff.
Let's switch this. Let's see what this one is. What's the most important lesson you've learned about conservation through your waterfowl hunting experiences and career? Sounds deep. That hunters are conservationists. And I think that everybody should know that through license sales, ammunition sales, even just our compassion for waterfowl, is that we are the conservationists that are out there. And a lot of people don't understand that. So making sure just the general public is aware of that knowledge, but definitely, definitely that.
All right. Favorite moment from this season? Gosh, got a lot of them. Probably the time all of the blind members got together finally. Like it was me, my brother, my buddy Joey, and Jeff. All four of us finally hunted together. All four of us. So that was awesome. We had a great hunt there. And then, God, the last Wednesday of the duck season, we had a really good hunt in a wetland. And that was a lot of fun. Dog had some awesome retrieves. Really, really, really phenomenal retrieves. Finding some birds in the tules. So that was pretty cool. Yeah, overall, it was a fun duck season.
Yeah, pulled the same question from your hat and kind of going through, and I'm probably gonna miss one. Was able to hunt some flooded timber, shoot 7 wood ducks, which I've never done before. That was super cool. You and I had a hunt where we almost didn't go. We had a podcast that we were doing. I think it was like at 10 o'clock. So we were like, we got to be out of there by 8:30. Shoot time that day was like 6:45. And you and I both shot really well, and we were done in like 45 minutes with 14 good ducks. And it was like, oh, we got time to spare. We brushed the blind up. We went and cut more brush. Just kind of totally unexpected. And then we were able to take our hunt techs out this year to our club and kind of had a little competition.
That was fun.
Jeff had two of them in his blind, and I took two of them, and we were a couple checks away. And they finished with their 21 by, I think, 8:30. And we were done by about 9:30 with our 21. So we killed 42 ducks for 6 guys. I don't think any of those guys had been on a hunt like that with that many birds around. So that was a pretty cool one.
Yeah. Just everything aligned on that one. Best and work products of the season. Gosh, I don't really want to name one, but I actually had some bad encounters with some of the boss loads. So yeah. I had a bunch at a squib load, and then I had multiple duds, essentially. Mm-hmm.
Had a bad batch.
So that was really frustrating. In terms of the gear, you got that new Rigamrite bag. I don't even know what it's called, but it's got all the compartments in it.
Yeah.
Been super happy with that. That's probably on the best side, but I can't really think of any new items I got for hunting. Yeah. Oh, I got our call of the year. I bought that Riceland.
Oh yeah, I haven't bought spec that call. Yet. I should buy one of those.
Great overall call, but I haven't changed out my duck calls or goose calls in forever.
Yeah. It's hard to stick a new one on the lanyard when everything works.
Yeah, it really is. And then in terms of all my other gear, I've kind of fine-tuned it all over the years. And
yeah.
Yeah. Those shells were the worst. But I did shoot some other stuff that was made by Boss and shot really, really well and performed great.
That Wolframite was next level.
Yeah.
What's your go-to call when you're in the field, and why is it your favorite? I blow a JG Lair's hybrid. I just think it's the easiest to be able to produce multiple tones and control it as well as I can. I can get loud with it. I can get soft with it. I need to actually clean it because it was sticking on me at the end of this season, which was totally my fault because I haven't cleaned that thing in a while. So,
what size reed are you running in there?
I don't know what I have right now. What is it? 1.3 something. I got a reed pack. My buddy gave it to me and I switched out a couple of reeds. So I don't know what's in it right now. I should probably check, to be honest. It sounded good to me and I left that one in. So
yeah, know your reed lengths. Come on now.
That's above my pay grade.
1.375. Rank these birds in order of favorite to hunt. Mallards, widgeon, teal, and pintail. Oh man, I love all of these in all different ways too. Gosh, gotta go mallard number one. I like shooting pintail, but I love how widgeon work, and I really love widgeon in general. Darn it, you're gonna do this. So I'll go mallard, pintail, widgeon, teal.
Oh,
but on any given day, I would gladly take any of those. So I love shooting teal. Absolutely love widgeon. Yep.
All right. Why do you like shooting spoonies? You know why I like shooting spoonies? And I actually didn't shoot that many this year. I don't think I shot more than 10, probably.
Lies.
Because they decoy like no other duck around. And for some reason, if I shoot at them or near them, they die.
Have you ever hated on people shooting spoonies?
Yes, in a loving way. Not truly hated.
Yeah, I used to, because I came from my dad. But we didn't really see spoonies where we grew up.
Correct, and I probably had the same thing because we were hunting natural wetlands where they might taste a little bit different, and you had the option to shoot 7 good ducks most days, so you didn't need to shoot spoonies, and when we're in the rice, they're all eating the same thing.
Yeah, and well, my thing on the spoonies is like, if you're just taking whatever meat it is of the ducks you're shooting and getting sausage made and duck sticks,
who cares?
Then you shouldn't discriminate on the spoon because you're making sausage. They taste all the same.
Yeah. No, if I go out and like that's all I can shoot, I'm gonna shoot. I drove there to hunt. Like I'm not just gonna it's still a duck.
It's a duck. Now on a really, really good banger day, I'll pass. You might
pass.
Would you rather have motion on the water or flashing decoys?
If you could only have one.
Motion on the water. If it is a sunny day, straight sun, I might choose the flasher. But motion on the water.
Yeah. Yeah. Good answer. Correct answer. What is this? What's your favorite type of waterfowl to hunt and what makes it stand out for you? Favorite type of waterfowl? I mean, in what sense? Like that I get to hunt consistently or just if I could choose one to hunt? favorite type of waterfowl. Because like hunting wood ducks in trees is super fun to me because I don't get to do it that often. I haven't done it a lot before.
Yeah, but like how they hunt him, like in Wisconsin, you're just like, or not Wisconsin, but like South Carolina, et cetera. Would you want to do that where they're just flying through the trees and not decoying?
No, I would want like a timber decoy.
Flooded river.
Yeah, like that sort of thing. And I think it's the experiences that I haven't had a lot of ability to do is the stuff that at least currently in my hunting career, like I want to go pursue. Because, you know, I could go out to a refuge and I've done that before. I could go to rice blind. I've done that before. I could go sit in a muddy field and shoot 10 geese. I've done that before. But it's like the stuff that is new to me,
yeah,
or like tough to do, like that's on my list. And that's one of them. And I think they're cool ducks and I just don't get the opportunity to shoot a lot of them.
Yeah. Okay. Your favorite type of habitat to hunt and why? That one's hard. I mean, I like the scenery and the uniqueness of the landscape on wherever you're hunting, either like a wetland or a flooded river or things like that. I mean, rice is rice.
It will always be
rice. It'll always be rice and look pretty much exactly the same no matter where you go. So I do love hunting out of a boat. So, I mean, if I'm like hunting something flooded in a boat with trees, that to me is pretty hard to beat. But if I could get into a wetland that has trees and tules, et cetera,
yeah,
would love that. But to me, just like driving the boat, getting out to somewhere, setting up, having the ability to move, that one pretty much takes the cake. I don't do it enough anymore.
How many more of these you got over there? You need to share my hat?
Yeah.
All right. I think we've got like four more in there. What's one piece of waterfowl gear you absolutely can't live without and why? Are we talking about like gear, like what we're wearing, or just like gear in general, like anything? What's one piece of waterfowl gear you can't live without?
Yeah. Like what's the one thing that you're always like your number one go-to thing? Mine would be my calls.
Yeah. Calls in the rice, the auto jerk.
I love me
an auto jerk because it's going to put motion on the water on so many of those calm days. Could I live without it? Yeah. I mean, if we're talking about like necessity, absolutely need, I'd calls, sure. But like
what's your favorite part? Like, is it your backpack or is it
favorite
jacket?
Yeah. Favorite piece of gear that I currently have right now. Trying to think if I got anything new. Oh, I got a new headlamp. Shout out to Colton for turning me on to this headlamp. I got to find the name of it because I used to have like just Amazon headlamps I would run on batteries and they were bright, but they would go die pretty quickly. And we hunted with Colton one day and I thought he was wearing a light bar on his head, as bright as that thing was.
Is this like an Amazon buy?
No, you have to buy it from their website. It's called LED Lenser, LED LENSER. And they have a bunch of headlamps and they're fairly expensive. Shout out to my mother-in-law for buying me it for Christmas.
There you go. Solid.
It's rechargeable. It's lightweight.
I like that.
Yeah, the rechargeable is huge. It's lightweight and it is bright as all get up. So favorite piece of gear, especially for this year.
How do you pronounce it?
LED Lenser. So it's LED LENSER. And they got a bunch of different varieties on their website. They're not cheap, like I said, but worth it.
LED Lenser. Okay. If you could hunt with any legendary waterfowler, past or present, who would it be and why? I would probably have to go with Phil Robertson because I vividly remember the first Duckman VHS tape and my dad bringing it back to our house and like us watching the video with like a bunch of other grown men in our house. Like this is the craziest thing ever. Like in the swamps of Louisiana, cypress trees.
It'd either be him or Jim Ronquist in those like button willow videos they have.
And like the buck brush.
Yeah. Yep. Like that to me would be sweet.
Yeah. Tim Grounds would probably be a cool one to past.
Yeah.
Share the blind with. Lots of legends, but Robertson.
What's the best hunting tip you've ever received that you still use today?
Keep your head down.
Motion kills ducks.
There you go.
You know, I'm going to trademark my tip of match the hatch, but for waterfowl, don't throw out 100 decoys if you're jumping four mallards out of a pothole.
What's your catchy tune here?
Match the hatch? That's the fly fishing?
Match the feather?
Yeah, something like that. That's the tip I give to all the duck camp folks that come through is like...
Match the hatch.
Just match what you're seeing. So if you're fly fishing, you match the hatch. If you're duck hunting, you match what you're visually seeing.
You need to work on your
I'll have to handle. Slogan that and then trademark it.
All right, this one's to you. What's the most challenging interaction you had with an upset hunter and how did you handle it?
Challenging reaction I had with an upset hunter and how did I handle it? Trying to think if there's any crazy interactions that we've had during work. Somebody wasn't happy. I've had a guy come in. There was the water situation at one of our properties was too low. The manager that we had at the time had a little bit too much water out and blinds were very tough to float decoys in, which was totally our fault. And that guy, he gave me a little tongue lashing and just, same thing we've talked about many times before. You just have to accept it. If it's our fault, it's our fault. And yeah, we'll try to make it better in whatever way we can, whether we make up a hunt for that person. But there's nothing that sticks out in my mind, which I guess is good. There's not a lot of upset hunters that I've had come through.
There was one early on when the hunt program first started. A gentleman was drawn for a hunt and then he brought his adult daughter and they had like a phenomenal hunt, like limits of ducks, shot some geese, overnight lodging, steaks, like the whole works. And I don't even remember what he was upset about, but he was upset that he thought it was going to be better.
And when it couldn't be
like,
better.
What? Yeah. Like, whoa. Like it said once in a lifetime. I was like that is once in a lifetime. You just went to a phenomenal club, ate steaks with the owner, shot two limits of ducks, and shot a bunch of bonus geese.
Yeah.
What's not to like? Yeah. You know, that was literally like it in a nutshell.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't run across it too much in person. At least, you know, we're not out there running the hunts on a daily basis much anymore. We do send out a survey, so we kind of just see people typing some displeasures, but nothing crazy. We try to fix anything we can that is on us that goes wrong. So try our best and try to keep people happy.
We try our best.
So that is the end of questions from a hat.
That was it.
That was a lot of questions. We're going to move on to... Oh, is that a question we didn't read? Or is that you already read that one?
Nope.
You already read that one? We're going to shift focus to just some end-of-season numbers through the CWA hunt program, as well as a little bit of the veteran hunt program. And then we're going to ping in Mike Kellogg, our veteran hunt program coordinator, who is hopefully done picking up his very large goose spread somewhere out in California. But this season through the general hunt program, we had 2,448 hunters and 49 non-hunters. So if you ever want to bring a non-hunter on your hunt, they do count as somebody in your hunting party. So if your blind can hold three hunters, they count as one of those people. But we don't charge them the $25 access fee. They just have to be a member. So 49 non-hunters, 161 volunteers, which is awesome because our program would not run smoothly if it wasn't for all the volunteers that came out and helped this year. 124 youth hunters, which are comprised of both male and female youth hunters. We had 194 adult females. Our veteran program had 844 veterans, which that number will go up because that is not including the veteran weekend numbers or the late goose season numbers, which we get out a lot of veterans. So we'll be floating somewhere in the mid 900s about for our veteran hunt program specifically. And then if we go to harvest, we talked about harvest statistics in a previous episode, more detailed property by property. I'm just going to talk about total harvest. So total harvest on CWA owned properties. So this is Goose Lake, Grizzly Ranch, Denverton, Quimby Island, Butte Creek Island Ranch, Sanborn Slough, Pope Ranch. There was 4,533 birds harvested. So that is both ducks and geese. If we add in our Staten Island numbers, which we do not own Staten Island, but we have our contract with them to go hunt out there, the total gets bumped up to 5,928 waterfowl harvested for the 24-25 season. So we just want to thank everybody that did come out and participated. We want to thank everybody that applied, even if you didn't get drawn. We're always trying to add more opportunities so that our draw odds increase for folks to be able to get drawn. I'll be computing those statistics here soon, and we will update it on our website so you can see actually what the odds of getting drawn are. I believe last year was like 1 in 60 or something like that, and it varied depending on the refuge, but we do post the draw odds statistics on our hunt program website under the FAQ tab, so that'll be updated here in the next few weeks. But without further ado, we're going to get Mike on the phone.
And we will have some turkey
hunts. Oh, yeah.
Turkey hunts coming up.
Look out for that. We have some pig hunts online currently. And turkey will be added probably by the time this podcast airs.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Kellogg.
How you doing, buddy?
Give us the report, buddy.
You are on the Save for the Blind podcast. Welcome.
Oh, boy.
So,
well, isn't that some fun stuff?
The last 5 days, you guys have been running and gunning.
We have been. Yes, sir. We're just getting back to Rio Vista right now from picking up the spread out kind of towards the Sassoon. And not a swing and a miss today, but it wasn't everything that we expected with the high ceiling and all that good stuff, right? A lot of birds in the area. And now we're going to pick up some more decoys on the Delta after we leave our buddy Louie's shop here in Rio Vista. And as far as the ducks go, man, a lot of the vets absolutely laid into the ducks. So it was a very busy, action-packed weekend. We had, of course, the women's hunt at a Grizzly Ranch with Wounded Warrior that we did. I know they shot a lot of shells, might not have harvested a bunch of birds, but
opportunity. That's what we're here for. Opportunity.
Lots of targets.
Lots of targets. Yes, sir. And then of course the sink is flooded out, as you guys know very well. So. Yeah. I could only imagine right now, but, we were able to move some vets around that weren't able to hunt Sanborn and Butte Creek Island Ranch and get them out to different properties. But, I mean, we had vets all over the place, as you guys know. I mean, I'm sure there was over 100 vets that we had out in the last 5 days between Lake Goose and Veteran Hunt Weekend and all that good stuff, man. How you guys doing?
Doing good, man. Oh, just wrapping the season up. Almost over.
Right on.
A couple more hours.
Right on.
Technically, for balance. Right,
yeah. Technically, yeah, you could go up north.
But overall, late goose season, what was the report on the ground?
So, we didn't hunt it Saturday. Saturday, we were out scouting, moving around, just trying to find the birds. And we've talked to a bunch of our friends up north, talked to some other guides, and we talked to guys down the Delta, talked to guys out in Dixon. The only place I didn't really talk was people in Los Banos. So we ended up on the Delta, set it up Saturday afternoon, and Sunday we had guys out with some vets that shot And it was mediocre, right? You could tell that the birds been shot at all season. Some of them wanted in, some of them didn't. We had an issue with the hide a little bit on the Sunday thing where there was some guys that wanted to be looky-loos and a goose decoy spread. So still a lot of fun, still put a lot of rounds in the air. That day was not too bad. And then Monday, after the Aleutians, or I guess the Lessers, closed, guess what wanted to show up?
The Aleutians.
The Aleutians, yeah. And, yeah, so honestly, man, I mean, no real big numbers. There's a lot of birds around that got pushed out of the causeway, a lot of birds in Dixon. Talking to our friends up north, birds are super splotchy, I guess, you know, kind of broken up, and no real big feeds that made it worth picking everything up and then heading north.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we were kind of just free agents, you know what I mean? We knew birds were in the area. Most of it we had access to, we were shooting traffic. Didn't find any real big feeds or super promising feeds, but there's just so much area, right, as we all know. So wasn't our best one. It wasn't like a few years ago when we were shooting those drought years and access is easy, but as duck hunters, we want water, but not too much water. Right. We're never really happier as goose hunters. There's too much water, not enough water, or there's too much water and then your access sucks. And then there's not enough water. And you know,
gotta complain about something.
Yeah. Oh yeah, man. It's just, yeah. So, mediocre, but the most important part, everybody had fun. It was safe. You know, it was a damn good time. And of course we're always, I think, you never know everything with these damn geese and ducks. It's just constantly learning. And yeah, super, super good. Very successful in my eyes. But yeah, it's all good. I got to see Carson one of those days briefly, but I didn't get to see you, man. You were like hiding in your cave or something.
Yeah, it's work.
He's not a late goose guy.
All work and no play. I'm just watching you guys. I know. Do whatever you do.
Jeff's too cool for the geese, dude. He likes killing them over water or something. I don't know. I haven't figured them out. Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, it was good. We had, of course, Colonel Mike Peters is out. And he's had a great time. He tried coaching us up on the goose guide thing.
All things
and,
goose,
you know, what
related.
All things goosey. Yeah. Yep. Tried to make sense of it until we're like, sir, you have no idea what you're talking about. But, hopefully he'll laugh about that later. I'm sure he will. So, yeah, man, it's been a great time. Been freaking outstanding for sure. Have you guys heard of anybody doing real well anywhere?
I haven't got very many good reports.
Yeah, zero.
Yeah. So
it sounds like there'll be lots of geese alive for next season.
Yeah, maybe.
Dude, yeah. And there's out in Dixon today, there was no shortage of birds. But we're right in between two very large feeds, and these birds would lock up and they just wouldn't quite break that 50. And then once they started to commit to us, I mean, we had specs that were whiffling in on us and everything, and they saw all the live birds that were north of us, and that was it, right? So
how many you guys end up with today?
15.
That's not terrible.
Yeah, 10 darks and 5 snows. So nothing, I mean, we're hunting over like 1,900 full-body decoys too, so
it's a lot of work.
Yeah, we had guys out yesterday on the Delta, and I think that they put down 13 or 14 specs with maybe 4 dozen decoys, right? So then talked to another guy out on the islands that used no decoys yesterday and absolutely got after him. So
new strategy.
Yeah, time to sell the decoys.
Go blind.
You know. Yeah, I know, dude. Yeah, it's crazy, but still fun, right? It's all part of it. So
we appreciate you. Okay. So we got Mike Kellogg, our volunteer veteran hunt program coordinator. Mike, thanks for everything that you're doing. Congrats on reaching the 1,000 veteran hunters through the hunt program. So awesome job.
Right on.
We appreciate you and the Colonel. So. And all the other volunteers that make that program possible, man. So just want to say thanks for coming on, and we appreciate you.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for everything. Thank you, CWA. Thanks to all the volunteers. You guys are awesome and would not be possible without you guys, seriously. But I'll talk to you guys soon and have a good rest of your podcast, gents.
All right. Appreciate you.
See ya.
Bye, guys. Thank you, guys. Talk to you. Bye.
There you have it. Goose season was not a banger like people hoped.
I think it would have been pretty good if we didn't have all that flooding.
I think so, too.
But that really hurt things. So
they could go get water wherever they wanted.
Spread then out.
They wouldn't have to leave. They could get water right next to their feed because their feed was already flooded. It made access hard. I mean,
what is it? Just access, just driving around the valley is hard right now.
Yeah.
Everything's closed. Roads are closed.
It was a rough late goose. Like I said, I haven't seen any of the main outfitters that I follow on Facebook. I haven't seen anybody post anything. Talked to a few folks that have gone on some guided hunts. People that I know in the industry, people were picking up early, not even hunting the last couple of days because it was so bad. So, hey, they killed some geese. It's like you said, 15 geese for 1,800 decoys is a lot of work.
It's a lot of work, man. Goodness.
But boy, well.
Cool. So that wraps it up. Another Save for the Blind podcast. We appreciate everyone listening. Catch you next time.
Bye. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Save It for the Blind podcast. You can find our podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.